FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm coming at you from Vancouver, British Columbia, at the Sprott Resource Conference. It has another name, but for our purposes, Sprott Resource Conference works. As always, we invite you to be part of the show, to participate. The show is all about you after all. So the email address is kl@carrylutz.com. So been here for a couple of days now at the conference. There's about 70 odd companies, all resource sector based. There's a number of speakers. Obviously, Sprott Global is sponsoring the conference. And there's, I'd say, a good 500 to 700 people here. Their attendance is definitely up in spite of the fact that we've seen gold, silver, commodities prices, copper, everything kind of crashing, going down, or not so much crashing, but just declining precipitously. I don't know. I tend to think it's probably shorter term, probably gone down a little bit more than expected, but there's a seasonal factor in here. And if the market follows through like it does 70% of the time, the fourth quarter should be up 10 to 15% at least, which will more than erase the recent losses. I don't prognosticate on price because I'm always wrong. And as I've told you in the past, if you listen to my advice, I guarantee you, you're going to lose money in the short run. Hopefully in the long run, you'll do better. So just be advised. But hey, I'm here with my good friend here, Bill Powers. And Bill, it's good to talk to you again.
Good to chat with you as well, Carrie, and good to be here.
Hey, so your site, tell us about your site these days.
Well, it's miningstockeducation.com, and you can find resources, interviews with fund managers, investment analysts, CEOs, and the like.
So we've been walking the floor here together for the past couple of days. What's your feeling about the mood of the conference?
Well, gold got crushed the day before, the day of the conference started. So there was a little damper, and there was some frustration as we chatted with people. However, I think that overall, even though that happened, there's been a lot of optimism. Of course, when you're talking to junior mining companies, they need to be optimistic about the commodity price because that is their product. So they're not profitable unless the price goes up. However, just speaking with not only the CEOs and the representatives of these companies, but also chatting with a couple Sprott brokers and some analysts, there is the viewpoint that this is a bottom. We may have had a sell-off. It could be a mini capitulation, and then we're going to see the rise, like you mentioned, going into the end of the year. But I tend to agree with you that predicting the gold price and the precious metals price, especially in the short term, it can be quite difficult.
Yeah, now there's a thought. An optimistic junior mining executive. Who would have ever thought such a thing existed? You know, they're a persistent lot. They're able to get through turbulent markets. They're able to triumph over difficult or very threatening geopolitical conditions. You've been talking with a lot of them. What is the one common thing you see, common thread that links these junior miner executives? And we're talking the real ones, the top ones, the ones that don't just exist to sell shares in their company, but are really out there to build world-class companies and really share in the profits along with their investors.
Well, I think it's the drive to succeed and to be profitable themselves. And honesty and a desire to be profitable yourself, they're not mutually exclusive. So a lot of the best CEOs, in fact, we listened to a panel earlier today of four of the top CEOs. Those men were driven. They have multiple companies. They don't even start one company. They start multiple companies at the same time. They grow them. Obviously, they make money in the process, but throughout it, they're concerned about producing value for investors.
Yeah, and that is a great point, that that there's a value system among these top junior mining company executives. And it's not all about me. You don't see like a zillion stock options. A lot of them, when they start their companies, they don't even take salaries, or they take nominal salaries. The directors, everybody wants to be paid in shares, because that's when you know that they're fully invested in the company. So those four people we saw, among them people you've heard on this show before, they all said that basically they're not in it for the paycheck.
That's right. And I should mention that when you're talking about junior mining companies, there's different profiles of CEOs. If you get the geologist who loves the rocks, loves the project, does want to make the discovery for fame and wealth, but that profile of a junior mining CEO is quite different than the guy who comes from the financial world. And it's just a stark difference when you talk to him in particular.
Yeah, and unfortunately for the sector too, Bill, I think you'll agree that often the geologists are not the most effective communicators, because they'd rather talk to rocks than people. They're not the most effective communicators getting their company's message out, and they're woefully deficient, many of them are, in terms of branding their enterprises.
That can be true. And especially on the financial side, when it comes to marketing and raising funds, if you have a small microcap mining company, the geologist CEO sometimes does not do the best in terms of marketing and financing, raising funds.
Yeah, and they can be stubborn too. It's an interesting phenomenon. I've witnessed it for many years. And I was thinking of even starting a business where we train these people how to be effective communicators and how to effectively brand their companies, because some of the names they come up with are just like really, really just woefully wanting. But these people are kind of like, it's in their DNA. They're risk takers. They're willing to go against all odds to make their companies succeed. So there's a streak that runs through them that's kind of like connected to the people that came to North America from all over the world seeking more opportunities. They were the ultimate risk takers.
Yeah, that's correct. And mining is fundamental to our society. True wealth is either grown from the earth or dug out of the earth. That's where it all starts. And we've been talking the last couple of days that one of the things that needs to be communicated to the broader public is the role that mining plays in our life, what it produces for us, many things we have in our hands, our iPhones, our TVs, our cars. Without mining, none of that would be possible.
Yeah. And it's a shame that mining has gotten a bad rap. You know, granted, 50, 60 years ago, there was not the environmental consciousness that exists today. Things were done and waste disposal, etc., that just would never be done today. But that wasn't, these people were evil. It was largely from ignorance of the consequences of their acts. The environmental awareness of this industry now, I'd put it up there with any industry on the planet. Don't you agree?
Yeah, I would definitely agree.
All right. So, hey, but interestingly enough, even though society is against, you know, mining entities, the industry still carries on. These people are still motivated to go out, start companies, and discover and succeed. So you can't really put down the human spirit.
I agree.
So when we look at the future of the industry here, okay, it's got capital challenges, it's got management challenges, employment challenges, because not enough people, not enough younger people are going into the industry. What do you think can be done here to increase an awareness of the opportunities that exist in the industry and to help assure its continued expansion?
Well, first I want to preface it by saying I'm not an expert in mining recruitment because I didn't come up through the mining industry myself, nor was I from a mining family. But just from observing, there's the Young Mining Alliance and different brands and social media groups that are out there that are really trying to do that. And then, of course, there's the college recruiting programs that are out there as well. But I will tell you this, having gone to a number of the PDAC conventions, which is the largest mining convention in Toronto, that there are not a lot of young people there. Most people are 40 and above, and probably half of them appear to be 60 and above that are going there. And the younger ones that are there, many of them appear to be maybe aspiring geologists. But that's just kind of my observation, having gone to those major conferences.
Yeah, that's kind of due in part to the bad rap it's gotten in the media, environmental concerns, et cetera. But there's a lack of really knowledge on the part of younger people that talent in this industry really gets rewarded extremely well, and success gets rewarded. And I guess if more people knew about it, they'd probably consider careers in mining.
Yeah, absolutely.
So going ahead, though, we got to have this in our society, as you said, to continue to prosper, to continue economic expansion, improvement of quality and standard of living. So something's got to be done looking ahead to make this thing work. And yet nobody has really found the formula yet.
Well, I think the Trump administration, if we delve into politics, I think that they are trying to move forward the natural resource sector and cut out a lot of the bureaucratic red tape, some of which is probably rightfully not warranted, in order to improve the permitting process in America and streamline that for the mining company. So I do think with this current administration that there is an ally to the mining industry in America.
Yeah, first one in a long time. You would have thought the Bushes would be more predisposed towards encouragement of the resource sector, being that Bush 41 was an oil company executive and Bush 43 was also involved, although not very successfully, in the oil business. But you make a great point that the first thing the Trump administration did was freeze a proposed regulation that would require in the U.S. that mines be monitored and restored to their exact prior state before the mining took place, but monitored thereafter for 30 years, which was enormously expensive, which pretty much foreclosed many viable projects that were environmentally feasible.
Yeah, that's right. And at the conference this morning, there's also been chatter about the Trump administration and what they just announced regarding looking at the uranium industry and how that pertains to national security.
And that's a great point, too, because there was a time when the United States produced virtually all of its required uranium. And I say United States, but that includes Canada, the Athabasca region, which is the largest producer of uranium in the world. Now we produce like 20-25% of our uranium needs in the U.S. itself, Canada and other places in the world making up the balance. So vitally important industry for the U.S. to restore to at least some semblance of its former glory. Hey, of all the different sectors here, we've got gold, silver, we've got uranium, we've got a couple of lithium producers tucked away in a corner. Any of those sectors really you see big opportunities in now?
Well, I think one of the safest one is the uranium industry, as we're talking about. It's produced, I think the spot price is $23, $24 a pound. But nobody can produce it at that. You know, the average cost, I believe, to produce is around $40 a pound, and it has to be at least $60 a pound or more to incentivize companies to even develop and bring more supply into production to the market. So that's a safe bet from a macro trend. But then also in the near term, many of these U.S. uranium companies are seeing a sharp increase in share price because of what's going on politically as well. Not just the fundamentals, the supply and demand fundamentals of the uranium industry, but what's going on politically, as we mentioned with the Trump administration and looking specifically at the U.S. Uranium supply. So yesterday, Energy Fuels, uranium and vanadium producer here in America, their share price went up, I believe, about 20%, as did UR Energy's share price. So uranium companies that have assets in America, they are doing pretty well. And I think that if you're willing to hold it over the long term, at least a couple years, if you buy it now, I don't think you'll be disappointed in a few years.
Hey, it makes a lot of sense, Bill. Hey, thanks for talking with us. Just tell us again where we find you.
Website is miningstockeducation.com, and you can find my podcast under that same title, Mining Stock Education.
All right, excellent, Bill. And hey, any questions for Bill, myself, don't hesitate to join the discussion. Email me at kl@carrylutz.com, Twitter feed at Carrie Lutz, Facebook page Financial Survival Network. Bill, we'll talk to you again real soon.
Thanks, Carrie.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.